This is KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein. With me now to talk about education issues in the state is the president of the Arizona Education Association, Andrew Morrill. Andrew, good morning.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you with us. I need to get your reaction, first of all, to these reports that Superintendent Hupenthal recorded robocalls talking about the benefits of private schooling.
Well, I think it's very sad, and I take that as much from what's been communicated to me by teachers, other folks in the education community. We've had inquiry after inquiry to the AEA asking, why is Superintendent Hupenthal doing this? Why is a man who was elected out of the public trust to lead and uphold our public education system clearly drawing his campaign lines, throwing himself over, not into a choice issue, and I'll explain the difference, but really into a market strategy for the profiteering side of education? Because we've had choice in this state for a long time. Parents have always had the choice as to whether or not they wanted to send their students to private schools. We're far beyond choice now, Steve. We're into market strategy where you try to create the market for your customer base, for your product, and you try to squeeze out others who are delivering the same kind of service, in this case, education.
If this were not an election year, would this have happened?
I don't believe so. I think that Superintendent Hupenthal, he's always been a choice advocate, but as I have said, we're no longer talking about choice. I think he's drawn his line in the sand, and he's crossed over and said that as a candidate, I will embrace the profiteering motives for education. I will embrace and I will choose as my alliance those who see education as a for-profit venture.
Andrew, let's go into more general topics. I want to ask you about how competitive you think Arizona's K-12 students are when it comes to the rest of the country. How do we measure it, and how has that changed since Hupenthal took over for Tom Horn?
Well, I taught high school English in the Marana District down on the northwest side of Tucson for 17 years, and I can tell you that I wrote recommendation letters for my students to some great schools, and not just the Harvards and the Yales, but the Vanderbilts, Drakes, the Drexels, the strong academic institutions around the country. And they got into those schools, and they got in because of a solid education platform that was delivered by classroom teachers, led by administrators that knew how to work and were getting resources from the state. I think that there was a, I think that in some ways Superintendent Hupenthal has benefited from an arena of fairly low expectations. He was not a champion of public schools when he was in the legislature. He regularly supported tax cuts and then the education funding cuts that almost always followed. But when he became superintendent, he had an open door policy. He seemed to be embracing a lot of the education perspectives. I think he has done a good job of trying to bring together voices. He's done an admirable job, for instance, of talking about why our new academic standards are good for students and why they make sense. And I do offer him credit there. I don't believe he's been a game changer. I don't believe he's been a needle changer. And in part, I think that's because he helped create a very, very rigid, constrictive structure in which our schools operate when he was in the legislature. And he's finding himself unable really to do a lot in that system that he helped create.
Well, that brings us directly to the legislature, which is, in a general sense, do lawmakers care enough about K-12 education, and is that reflected in funding?
I think they do care, Steve. I have a hard time talking about any individual legislator, even some that have been the most the strongest opponents to education funding. It's hard for me as a father of five to look at another adult and say, you don't care. But then again, we have to look at actions. And unfortunately, anybody's regard is very hard to plot because this state is in a downward spiral and trajectory in terms of its investment into its public schools. And we've seen that year after year. We were the lowest per pupil funded state in 2008, and that's by an objective study of state per pupil funding across the country. Then for the next 5 years, we cut the most out of our general fund budget of any state in the country. So we started out low and we got worse. We know that in the face of increasing expectations at all fronts in education, ramping up expectations for how our students learn, what they learn, how teachers perform in the classroom, we're increasing expectations, but we're lowering our investment strategy. So do people care? I'm sure they do. Have they put their caring into action with a good agenda and budget for schools? not yet.
Andrew, if there were reasonable funding increases to at least somewhat make up for all the cuts during the worst of the recession, where should that money be spent wisely?
We've got to fund the formulas, fund the formulas, fund the formulas. And what that means is this state, over a period of decades, created a per-pupil formula that addressed the various needs a student would have and the kind of school that could respond to those needs. So into that formula went how we pay people and how we staff schools to have the right amount of staffing and how we pay for facilities. And there was something called a capital funding formula where we derived the calculation for what kind of buildings we would need and how we would modernize those buildings as time went on, how we would put technology in those buildings. And in 2008, we backed away from those, and in successive years we did as well. Now the governor wants to erase the debt of two of those lines, pretend that we don't owe ourselves that money, zero out the debt, and say, well, now we don't owe ourselves, and we have this new badly cut fund for capital. In reality, we're far behind where we need to be. But of all the priorities, I think I would look at full-day kindergarten because it's such a game-changer for the early grades and because we're now requiring our third-grade students to read at grade level before they can progress to the fourth grade. Ironically, we passed that law in the same year that we voted to cut full-day kindergarten funding for our students.
Andrew, why did full-day kindergarten become such a partisan issue? When Janet Napolitano was governor, it seemed like a lot of people were on board, and as soon as she left, it seemed like a lot of people jumped ship.
Because in Arizona, we're so polarized on our issues, including education, that we try to too many folks elected try to figure out how they can do damage to an elected official from the other party by assigning them an issue. And too many people looked at full-day kindergarten as part of Janet Napolitano's agenda. And instead of asking whether or not it was good for students, they said, how can we hurt her? We can hurt her by trying to attack her full-day kindergarten scheme. If we had been doing what was right for students, we would have put full-day kindergarten funding into the formula on a per-pupil basis so that as that went up, we would be able to meet the growth needs of full-day kindergarten funding. We see the same thing going on nationally with people who don't like Obama. They'll associate certain policies with him and say, I don't like those policies. They stop evaluating what's good for students, and they think only about political maneuverings and opposition or support for the people they want in office.
I suppose this is going in the same direction, but what should residents take from the fight over Common Core, even the idea of the name of Common Core?
Yeah, and I have to tell you that I'm one of the few people that really doesn't mind the fact that we changed that name, because I don't think that Common Core inspires anybody. Okay. As an educator of 17 years, I at least understand why you want students prepared for college and career readiness. I don't think that's so bad. The real problem, Steve, with our debate on the standards is we're debating whether or not standards are good for students. I will tell you that they are. In and of themselves, these standards are good. They ask more of students. They ask them to think more critically. They ask them to apply their knowledge in ways that the earlier standards didn't. And about three-quarters of the teachers polled, when they are polled, say that they actually like the content of the standards. But what we're not asking at the policy level is, what do schools and teachers need? What support, what resources to teach in a new way to new levels? And the funny thing is that teachers are being absolutely crystal clear on the needs they have. We just have to have more people listening as they form the budget for the coming years.
Andrew Morrill is president of the Arizona Education Association. Andrew, thanks for fitting us in today.
Thank you so much.